So what do a photorealistic Disney World running perfectly in the palm of your hand and a silent crypto miner hijacking your laptop in a coffee shop have in common?
Well, today we are looking at the beautiful and frankly sometimes terrifying reality of optimizing code.
Right. We are going to see how the absolute limits of software engineering are, totally changing the way we play.
And simultaneously exposing some pretty massive vulnerabilities in our daily digital lives.
Yeah, it's a lot. So welcome to today's deep dive. It is Saturday, August 15, 2026, and we are unpacking a packed, adrenaline-fueled intelligence briefing from Tech and Game.
We really have a massive 24 hours in the tech and gaming world to get through today.
We do. And our mission here is to cut through the marketing noise, cut through the complex jargon, so you understand exactly how these industry milestones and these urgent tech advisories actually impact you.
Because today's sources really offer this perfect snapshot of the modern digital landscape. I mean, we're seeing incredible leaps in hardware
Oh,
performance,
absolutely.
but we're also seeing the consequences of that rapid technological adoption when it outpaces our security.
Okay, let's unpack this, starting with the absolute juggernaut that just dropped at the Disney D23 2026 Entertainment Showcase.
Juggernaut is the right word. This was huge.
Seriously, Square Enix officially revealed the gameplay trailer for Kingdom Hearts the Fourth. It is slated for a late 2027 release, and it's coming to PS5, Xbox Series X and S, PC, and crucially, it is running natively on the Nintendo Switch 2.
Which is just, it's a massive technical achievement.
It is, and the setting they showed off is visually staggering. We're talking about Sora, the main character, entering the land of the dead from Pixar's Coco. Yeah, so you have this hyperfluid, acrobatic Keyblade parkour happening across these luminous marigold-lit bridges. It's built on Unreal Engine 5.
And Disney is really leaning into the cross-media scale here.
Completely. They also announced a companion anime series that's currently in production for Disney Plus and the Disney Channel to chronicle the prequel lore.
So they're essentially building an integrated cinematic universe, but spanning consoles, streaming, and animation simultaneously.
Exactly. But I have to challenge the actual tech behind this because, I mean, Unreal Engine 5 on a handheld, that sounds incredible in a press release.
It does sound like a bit of a stretch.
Right. Doesn't that inherently mean massive compromises? When a game has, towering verticality and seamless asset streaming, are we really getting a next-gen experience on the Switch 2? Or is it just a heavily downgraded port disguised by some optimized shaders?
What's fascinating here is how they are completely avoiding the brute force method.
Okay, how so?
Well, if you look at the tech and game specs matrix, a high-end PC relies on raw electrical horsepower to render an Unreal Engine 5 environment. The Switch 2 literally cannot do that without melting its battery in 20 minutes.
Right, it would just catch fire.
Exactly. So instead, they are utilizing custom Unreal Engine 5 builds with highly optimized shaders. These aggressively manage what the system actually draws on the screen.
I see.
And they combine that with ultra-high-speed cartridge loading to feed data to the processor just in time. So it actually hits a rock-solid 60 frames per second.
Wait, really? Both docked and handheld?
Both docked and handheld.
That's insane. Okay, so if the Switch 2 relies on incredibly tight memory management, how are the PS5 and the high-end PCs handling it? The briefing mentions things like PSSR and DLSS4.
Right, so let's break down what that actually means for you looking at the screen. Rendering a native 4K image means the graphics processor has to calculate and draw over 8 million individual pixels.
For every single frame.
Yes, for every single frame, 60 times a second. It is incredibly taxing. So what Sony is doing with the PS5 and PS5 Pro is using
Which
PSSR.
is PlayStation Spectral Super Resolution, right?
Exactly. It's AI reconstruction, and they render the game internally at a much lower resolution, which is easy on the hardware.
Okay.
And then they train an AI model to instantly guess what the missing pixel should look like to create a 4K image.
So it's like having a lead artist draw a quick sketch and then an army of super fast AI assistants instantly filling in all the fine details and colors before you can even blink.
That's a perfect way to visualize it. And then on the PC side, DLSS4 works on a similar principle.
But with uncapped frame rates, right?
Yeah, it pushes uncapped frame rates up to 240 hertz on ultra-wide monitors, plus full hardware ray tracing, which physically simulates how individual beams of light bounce off surfaces.
It's amazing that Square Enix needs to push all these bleeding-edge rendering techniques just to sell copies.
Especially because A simultaneous switch to availability in Asian and global markets guarantees massive attach rates.
Right, and what's wild is that on the other side of the industry, Nintendo is proving that massive hardware power can be just as effectively used to simulate, like, a cozy underwater ecosystem.
And it might actually be more profitable. The sales telemetry certainly backs that up.
Nintendo and the Pokemon Company just confirmed that Pokemon Pukapia has crossed 5 million units sold globally in just 4 months.
4 months. That's a masterclass in demographic capture.
It is. And the premise is wonderfully weird. You play as a Ditto, disguised as a human, and you are basically cultivating and expanding a customizable sandbox town.
It's co-developed by Game Freak and Koei Tecmo's Omega Force Studio, right?
Yep. And they just dropped their first paid DLC expansion called Bubbly Basin, which adds these massive underwater environments. But here's where it gets really interesting.
Okay, lay it on me.
5 million copies means that roughly one in every four Nintendo Switch 2 owners bought this game.
A 25% hardware attach rate in 16 weeks.
Right. I mean, think about your own group of friends who own a Switch. Statistically, one in four of them is currently playing as a Ditto Mayor.
Which is wild.
Is an attach rate that high for a life simulator actually normal? Like, it feels like an entire country's population suddenly agreeing on the exact same hobby.
It is exceptionally rare. I mean, for context, Mario Kart X Ultimate holds a 41% attach rate.
Sure, but that's Mario Kart.
Exactly. That is the definitive multiplayer launch title. Everyone buys Mario Kart when they buy a Nintendo console. A life simulator hitting 25% validates a very specific, very aggressive strategy.
What is the actual mechanics of that strategy? Like, why this game?
They basically synthesized two proven psychological loops. They took the deep, highly collectible lore of the Pokemon IP,
which people already love.
Right, and they mapped it directly onto the addictive daily habit social simulation mechanics of a game like Animal Crossing.
Oh, that makes perfect sense.
And they ran it on the Switch 2 with flawless technical execution, a locked 60 frames per second at 1080p in handheld mode. They realized that hardware optimization makes the daily act of watering digital plants feel totally frictionless.
So while Nintendo completely locks down that casual, cozy market, the massive competitive shooters are having to completely overhaul how they acquire players.
Oh, absolutely. The briefing highlights a huge shift away from traditional marketing.
Yeah, they are moving toward these unprecedented all-access gameplay funnels. The industry has basically fundamentally redefined what the words beta test actually mean this weekend.
Let's look at the two major shooter updates.
Right. First, Activision and Infinity Ward detailed Call of Duty, Modern Warfare 4. They are dropping a brand new compact resurgence map called Zodiac.
Which is this dense industrial battleground, right?
Yeah, towering wind turbines, multi-tiered factory rooftops. But the kicker is that Zodiac is going straight into the public beta during weekend 2, from August 28 to September 4.
And that's the first time Warzone gameplay is integrated into a pre-launch beta.
Exactly. Plus, they are throwing in a single-player campaign mission called Entrenched and showcasing their new directional mobility system, Omnimovement.
We really need to pause on Omnimovement.
Oh, for sure.
Because it fundamentally changes the spatial awareness required from the player.
Yeah. Because in a traditional shooter, your movement is kind of like driving a tank. You can sprint fast moving forward, but if you want to move side to side or backward, you're just reduced to a slow, awkward strafe.
Right.
Omnimovement changes the entire physics engine. It allows players to sprint, dive, and slide at full speed in any 360-degree direction.
So you can literally dive backward out of a second-story window while maintaining perfect aim on a target.
It completely shatters the traditional geometry of a firefight.
Which is incredibly intimidating for new players.
Totally.
So by putting that system, along with Warzone and the campaign, into a free beta, they are giving players a low-risk environment to build muscle memory before the actual retail launch.
Meanwhile, Electronic Arts and DICE are launching Battlefield 6 Season 4 on August 18th. And they are doing a massive crossover with Paramount's Top Gun, Maverick.
The scale of this one is just huge.
Yeah, they rebuilt the legendary Wake Island map from the ground up for combined arms warfare, dynamic tropical storms, fluctuating tides. It's crazy.
But the real addition is the two-seat fighter jets.
the FA-81F Super Spectre, and the F-74A SeaCat. You can't just jump in and fly like a lone wolf anymore.
You literally have to have two players coordinating in the same cockpit.
Right, a pilot flying the jet, and a WSO, a weapons systems officer, managing the radar and the ground strikes. Plus, they are running a free access trial for a full week.
The inclusion of the WSO mechanic is just a brilliant piece of social engineering.
How so? Because, I mean, at first glance, making a vehicle require two people just sounds like a great way to frustrate a solo player.
It does sound like that, but what it actually does is force social dependency. If you want to dominate the airspace, you cannot do it alone. You have to text a friend, tell them to download the free trial, and get in the cockpit with you.
Ah, so it transforms the existing player base into active recruiters.
Exactly. Battlefield is using the deep tactical cooperation of the carrier strike mode to pull entirely new social circles into their ecosystem.
So what does this all mean for you listening? To me, it feels like beta tests aren't actually testing server stability anymore. They are the actual product launch. It's like a car dealership letting you take a sports car on a cross-country road trip before they even ask if you want to buy it.
Yes. And not only are they letting you take the road trip, they're paying for the gas. Because they know that once you invite your friend along for the ride, the psychological friction of giving the keys back is much higher.
That makes total sense. Integrating all of this into a single pre-launch window establishes what the briefing calls an unassailable player acquisition funnel.
But, you know, while it's incredible to see how these studios optimize code and human psychology to capture our attention, it brings us to the second half of tonight's briefing.
Yeah, because that exact same drive for software efficiency is creating major friction right now when it collides with game development ethics and literal cybersecurity.
This is where we look behind the curtain at the precarious machinery powering all this entertainment.
There is a massive labor dispute currently unfolding at Saber Interactive regarding their upcoming game, Rideshare Stimulator.
It's basically the flashpoint of a much larger crisis in the creative arts right now.
It really is. Former lead writer Stella Sacco went public, alleging that she was dismissed midway through development. Sacco claims the studio utilized ChatGPT to write the remaining dialogue and generate procedural passenger encounters just to save time and resources.
Which is obviously a huge ethical concern for writers.
Right. Now, in response, Saber CEO Matthew Karch issued a statement claiming he did not know Sacco. However, Karch did openly confirm that generative AI is indeed being utilized to create what the studio calls infinite passenger encounters in the game's free ride mode.
So we do know the AI is in there.
Yes. And because of this, the game's Steam page disclosures have been officially updated to reflect the presence of generative AI content, which aligns with Steam's mandatory guidelines.
It's a profound shift. We are moving from worlds meticulously handcrafted by human writers to systems that procedurally generate endless, but potentially hollow, content based on algorithmic prediction.
And right as we grapple with the ethics of AI replacing human code, we have a literal software security emergency dealing with how our operating systems handle incoming network code.
This is the part that everyone needs to pay attention to.
The Dutch National Cybersecurity Center just issued an urgent warning. Threat actors are actively exploiting an unauthenticated vulnerability. It's CVE-2026-65400 in the macOS screen sharing service over TCP port 5900.
Which is a classic but highly severe infrastructure vulnerability.
Yeah. Hackers are using this to gain root execution privileges and deploy extremely stealthy Monero, or XMR, crypto miners directly onto Mac machines running macOS Tahoe, Sequoia, and Sonoma.
Apple is currently rolling out critical out-of-band updates to patch it as we speak.
But I need you to break down the actual mechanics of this for me, because this sounds terrifying. How does simply sitting on a public Wi-Fi network with screen sharing turned on allow a hacker to turn a personal MacBook into a literal crypto mining workhorse?
Without you even clicking a link.
Right. I'm just sitting there sipping my coffee, and I get hacked without downloading a malicious file.
So we need to understand what TCP port 5900 actually is. It is the standard network port for virtual network computing, or VNC. This is the underlying protocol macOS uses to let you share your screen with another computer.
Okay, I follow you.
Think of the network ports on your laptop like the doors in a massive apartment building. When you enable screen sharing, you are essentially leaving the door to apartment 5900 wide open, waiting for a legitimate guest to walk in.
Wow. Okay, so if I'm at a coffee shop, on their public Wi-Fi.
If you are on that public network, a threat actor sitting three tables away is on that exact same network. And because this is an unauthenticated vulnerability, meaning it bypasses the need for a password, the hacker doesn't need to pick a lock.
And they don't need to trick me into opening a door with a phishing email either.
Exactly. They simply walk down the digital hallway, see that door 5900 is open, and they quietly slide in. They gain root access to the machine, which is the highest level of administrative control, and they install a Monero miner.
Wait, why Monero specifically? Why not Bitcoin?
Because Bitcoin requires massive specialized server farms to mine profitably. Monero, however, is specifically designed to be mined efficiently on standard consumer processors, like the incredibly powerful M-series chips inside modern MacBooks.
That is wild.
The hacker sets up this invisible mining rig in your digital living room, and it siphons your hardware's processing power in the background to generate untraceable cryptocurrency for them.
Well, you are just left wondering why your battery is draining so fast and your fan is running so loud.
Exactly. The entire attack is completely silent.
That is just deeply unsettling.
It is. And this raises an important question, right? It ties directly back to the core theme of tonight's intelligence briefing, which is the absolute necessity of transparency and vigilance in our digital spaces.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Gamers are demanding profound transparency. When we look at Saber Interactive, players want clear boundaries between an AI-generated infinite scoop and human craftsmanship. They want the Steam tags to tell them exactly what is inside the product they're buying.
And on the cybersecurity side, it's about personal vigilance over your own hardware.
Precisely. Basic operating system hygiene is no longer optional. Patching an exposed network port or simply turning off a feature like screen sharing when you aren't actively using it is an unyielding necessity to prevent device hijacking.
That brings it all together perfectly.
Yeah.
For you listening, we have covered a massive amount of ground today.
We really have.
We explored the incredible engineering required to let Sora traverse Pixar's underworld on a Nintendo Switch 2. We unpacked how a Ditto life simulator can capture 25% of a hardware market in 4 months.
Which I still can't get over.
It's crazy. Then we broke down the psychology of how shooters like Call of Duty and Battlefield are using Omnimovement and two-player jets to weaponize their beta tests into unassailable social funnels.
And finally, we looked at the stark realities of our digital frontier, the ethical friction of AI-generated scripts replacing writers, and the silent, invisible threat of macOS crypto miners lurking on public networks.
We want you to actually act on this knowledge today. If you are listening to this deep dive on a MacBook right now, especially if you're sitting at a coffee shop or an airport, take 30 seconds. Go into your macOS system settings and double-check that screen sharing is toggled off unless you absolutely need it.
Treat it exactly like locking your apartment door.
Yes. Ensure you've downloaded the latest out-of-band security patches for Tahoe, Sequoia, or Sonoma. And the next time you are browsing a digital storefront, take a closer look at those Steam disclosure tags. Pay attention to how the games you buy are actually being made.
I will leave you with one final thought to mull over today. It builds on that tension between technological efficiency and human art.
Okay, let's hear it.
In a world where developers can now just press a button and deploy infinite AI-generated passenger encounters, and where shooters can provide massive, unending battle royale maps, will the truly finite, handcrafted human stories eventually become the most valuable, highly sought-after luxury commodity in entertainment?
That is a phenomenal question. When everything can be infinite, the things that actually end become precious. You can build the most complex, photorealistic virtual world imaginable and optimize the code to run flawlessly on any device. But if you don't know who is actually writing the stories or who might be secretly siphoning your laptop's power in the background, the illusion completely shatters.
It really does.
Keep enjoying the incredible leaps in technology, but always watch the grid that powers it. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. We'll catch you next time.